The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back. It's another week, Monday, and we're starting off with a really strong show. First hour, we're going to have Steve Cotter coming on talking to us about the discipline, where discipline and kettlebell training meets. He has a very, very unique approach to kettlebell training that I think you're going to really enjoy. And actually, a lot of you requested that we have him on the show, and I have to thank Dr. Peter Rouse for putting us together so quickly so that this show could come together so quickly. Second hour, we're going to be talking to Dr. Sudhanshu Rakhwar about stem cell therapy and its effects on type 1 diabetes. This is a very, very important show. You know, we've talked a lot about stem cell therapy over the years. Finally, we're starting to see some of these therapies materialize, and especially in the area of diabetes, which the country is suffering from because of their foolish choices of the foods that they choose. Nonetheless, will stem cell therapy be the solution? We're going to talk about that later in the show. My guest, Steve Cotter, has been well known throughout the physical culture community for innovative approaches to kettlebell training. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, I'm doing great, Carl. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Before we even get into what you do, how did this start out with you? Obviously, you started out training with kettlebells someplace else, and then you decided to kind of morph it into your own philosophy. Give me some back history on where you got started.
Well, as far as my philosophy, I have an extensive background in martial arts, specifically Chinese martial arts, and you know, that includes not only the physical training, but a lot of meditation and qigong, which is the breathing training. And so when I first was exposed to kettlebells, it was around 2003, and that was with Pavel, who everyone knows very well. But I had a background of about 20 years of actually teaching prior to learning about kettlebells. So my adaptation of kettlebells has come really from my experience as a teacher, and the idea of martial arts has really instilled in me the appreciation for comprehensive approach to training in general, not just kettlebell training. So mind, body.
I was just going to say, when we think of martial arts, what we really think of much more so than anything else is mindfulness. It's almost meditation in movement, right?
Absolutely. There has to be a relationship between our movement and our consciousness at all times.
So,
and that also leads to effective training. When we're distracted, we're not really getting full benefit from our practice, be it kettlebells or anything else.
Is it possible to even use mindfulness in anything else? Postulate something. You know, we talk about, like, let's say I'm squatting one day, right? It's very, very difficult to use mindfulness in something as that the motion is almost monolithic as a squat. But with kettlebells, I could see how you could use mindfulness, because doesn't mindfulness in motion actually require some sort of fluidity? When you think of Tai Chi, for instance, you think of karate, kung fu, you think about these, it's the marriage of very, very fluid movements all put together. Doesn't mindfulness require that level of movement in the body as opposed to just like a curl? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, there tends to be a rhythmic nature to martial arts, to meditation, but I would say that the more advanced the person gets, the less time is required to get into a state of deep concentration. Movements that are repetitive in nature, be it running or chanting, for that matter, tend to develop this connection between the mind and body. But with more practice, someone can get into a deeper concentration in less time. So I think that advanced practitioners of any form, whether it's bodybuilding or Tai Chi or anything else, they tend to find their, we might call it the zone in athletics. People, they find their zone, which is that point when things become very clear, where there's, we eliminate wastefulness in our movements, we eliminate unproductive thoughts. So I think this can be applied to even something like squatting. You know, many people take the approach to psych themselves out by, could be the slapping themselves or screaming or, you know, trying to work themselves into a frenzy. That's not really equated with the calmness of necessarily martial arts or meditation. But I think someone that's very advanced can really get into that state of concentration in a short amount of time with practice.
How valuable is that state of concentration in any type of exercise modality? Do you think that the benefits are such that it's worthy of truly working hard to obtain that level of mindfulness?
Absolutely. In the words of Dr. Norman Vincent Van Peel, Norman Vincent Peel, you can if you think you can. So basically, the opposite statement to that is you can't if you don't think you can. So before we really can accomplish anything, we have to have a clarity and a belief that we can do something. And this requires internal dialogue. It requires confidence. It requires a knowingness that whatever it is we're seeking out to do, we can do. So this applies very strongly to physical training. And the more advanced people get when you speak to very successful performers, they speak more about the mind than they do about the body. Because really, there's a saying in martial arts, the mind directs, the body obeys, and the chi or the energy flows. Hmm. And what that means is before something can happen, it has to be initiated as an idea in your mind. So I have to have a clear idea that I'm going to lift that bar or that I'm going to lift that kettlebell before I can actually do it. Once the mind makes a decision, then we send neural impulses that actually carry on the contractions to do the movement. So there's always a very strong connection between our mental processes and what we do physically.
Interesting. We're going to take a quick commercial break here in a moment, but I just want to carry on just a little bit more about your philosophy. So when did you actually develop this philosophy that ended up becoming your style of kettlebell training, do you think? I mean, how long ago was it?
Well, I can't say that I've developed my own philosophy, but I've borrowed philosophies that have been in existence really early on. I would say I've modified the kettlebell lifting that I do now is very different than what I was first exposed to. I'd say I've kind of brought it all together probably about 4 or 5 years ago after I had seen different variations of kettlebell lifting. And one thing that I moved away from, you know, say with what Pavel was doing, is very this sort of rigid type of approach and, you know, being hardcore and this type of thing. And hardcore is really just it's kind of a show. It doesn't have anything to do with performance. And I looked closer to martial arts and realized that the best performers, the greatest experts tend to be, externally they're very relaxed, they're very calm, they're often very humble, but they're extremely powerful in their movement. And I realized that it's not what we profess so much as what we can do. So, you know, this is not my philosophy. This is something I believe in, but we see this in the martial arts for ages. We see that there's a calmness and a relaxation and power sort of working together. So it's
gotcha.
This internal and external harmony.
Okay, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to pick it up with Steve Cotter. We're talking about where discipline and kettlebell training meet kettlebell arts. You're listening to Super Human Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. It's a cheesy fizzle.
CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio. Finally, a Bulbine supplement right from the source used in the original study. Phytoserms 347 is here. Bulbine natalensis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Ruthless Supplements has done the impossible. Each capsule of Phytoserms 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM Bulbine natalensis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Ruthless Supplements. Visit rlssupplements.com today. Pre-workout products crank you up, then leave you flat and fatigued. Except now, you're strung out from being overstimulated, hungry because it destroyed your appetite, and in a catabolic state because you can't eat for recovery and growth. That's why you need to get Lit Up from Applied Nutraceuticals. Lit Up is an original blend, not a copycat formula here. Lit Up delivers the perfect amount of energy, focus, pump, and intensity without feeling strung out or a loss of appetite for hours after your workout. Plus, Lit Up creates an anabolic environment by jacking testosterone levels through the roof. Get Lit Up today at appnut.com. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power Block, the world's best dumbbell.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Just want to remind everybody that Iron Mag Labs is having a transformation challenge with $6,000 in cash and prizes given away. Anyone can enter. You don't have to look ripped like a bodybuilder at the end of your transformation. You just have to have the greatest degree of change in your body to win. Go to ironmaglabs.com today to enroll. My guest this hour is Steve Cotter. We're talking about kettlebell training, really, and a unique approach to kettlebell training. I think that all kettlebell training requires some degree of mindfulness just because of the nature and fluidity of some of the movements. But nonetheless, Steve has really exploited this part of it because of his background with martial arts and has taken it to a totally new level. So when someone, let's say I'm a kettlebell guy, I train, you know, I've done some of Pavel's stuff and I've read his books and I have my own little thing going on at home where I do a certain number of movements and routines every morning. How would you change that? What would your approach change to the way I'm doing things now?
Well, of course, we have to look at the context of what are you trying to accomplish, what's your goal, and in general, with kettlebells, we want to be able to increase the density of training, so we want to be able to do more work in less time, or the same amount of work in less time, or the same you know, basically we want to maximize the use of our time. So at some point in time, your volume has to increase for your conditioning to increase. So one approach, or kind of the intuitive approach, a lot of people will take that don't really have complete education. They think of when you get to a sticking point, you try to push harder. You know, so you try to use more effort. You try to train extra sessions. But a lot of times, what we would actually have to look at is trying to eliminate waste. So in your movements, if let's say you're doing, it could be anything. Let's say you're doing swings and you're stuck at 20 or you're stuck at 25 reps, and every time you try to do more, you gas and you just can't go any further. So you've reached that sticking point. So what I would do is, instead of looking at trying to push harder, trying to use more tension, trying to squeeze your butt more, figure out where are you using energy that doesn't need to be used? Where are you being wasteful? And teach you how you can relax and use just the optimal amount of effort, not more than what's necessary, but just what's necessary for each rep. And then look at your breathing pattern. Are you, what type of breathing? Are you using more of a of an anatomical breathing where you're coordinating the movement and the breath together, or using more of a, what would be called a paradoxical breathing, where your body and breath is doing opposite. So we have to look at your movement patterns and cut the waste first before we start looking at increasing the speed of the lift or the load of the lift.
Let's talk
so
about,
that would be a
I'm sorry,
fundamental
no, no,
difference. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I apologize.
That's okay.
Let's talk a little bit about breath for a second, because breath plays a large role in a lot of the Eastern philosophies. It plays a large role in martial arts. Sometimes breath is actually used with the same word as energy, chi, right?
Yes, that's one definition. Exactly.
Okay. So what do you think about breathing in general? Let's talk about for kettlebell training, and then let's talk about for exercise modalities in general. Should somebody be forcing their breath? In other words, you know, there's a lot of people who say you should breathe in, hold your breath for a count of four, breathe out for 3 seconds, you know, for a count of three. You know, they have this very rhythmic method of breathing. Or should breathing be something that occurs on its own? I'm of a philosophy that we forget to how to breathe properly because of many of us sitting at our desks, being under stress will shorten your breath to almost a pant type of a breathing process. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, you're right. The breathing mechanisms become distorted from improper posture and from loss of mobility. So that's one issue. We have to mobilize the thorax so the body can take full breaths. But in terms of the patterns of breath, definitely we don't want to do this type of breath holding. Certainly in some cases when we're talking about more of a powerlifting paradigm where you're lifting max or near max load, then we will use Valsalva maneuver breath holding techniques. And the purpose of that is to stabilize the structure, to stabilize the spine
right.
under maximal load.
Right.
But we're not really doing those types of things in something like kettlebell lifting. What we want to do is, first of all, the breath will change according to the load that you're using. There's going to be definitely a different, let's say a 200-pound man is going to breathe differently if he's lifting a 16-kilogram kettlebell versus if he's lifting a 40-kilogram kettlebell. So,
okay.
So the load will affect. Also, the speed will affect. If you're doing 12 reps a minute, it's going to be relatively slow versus if you're doing 25, 28 reps a minute, which is going to be nearing full speed. And then, of course, the duration, how long you're working is going to change the breathing pattern. There's some fundamental things that everybody is going to do, but more times than not with kettlebell lifting. Now, of course, kettlebell is a very versatile tool, but I don't believe that we should do everything with the kettlebell. I think it has its best uses. So if your goal is to increase your maximal strength, a barbell is definitely going to be a better tool because it's more suited for that. But kettlebell is really fantastic for developing what we'd call strength, power, endurance. If you're looking to develop a variety of attributes at the same time with one tool, kettlebells are really good for that. So most of the kettlebell training is going to be more in the higher repetition or the fast lifts, the ballistic lifts, things like snatch, cleaning jerks done for many, many repetitions. And when we're doing these types of breathing, of course, as we fatigue, it's much more difficult to sustain the breath. So we always want to, almost always going to have an exhale at the end of the range of motion. So for a snatch, for example, at the very top of the snatch and at the very bottom of the snatch, we want to exhale. That's where the load is at its greatest leverage, and that's when we need to be most stable. And while the bell is moving, when it's sort of floating up and down, this is when we're going to be inhaling. So the breath, now again, this is more when you're dealing with a challenging load and you start getting fatigued. We want to take very short, fast exhales so that we can expel the breath very quickly, thereby emptying the diaphragm, emptying the lungs, and then the reflexive action is to inhale again right away. So the timing is really crucial. There's no one clear pattern that we always do in every circumstance, but generally speaking, we want to match the breath. We want to match the inhale as the torso is expanding, and we want to exhale as the torso is compressing.
And that stands to reason. I mean, that makes perfect sense, because you want to inhale, when the body is under the least amount of challenge, if you will, for lack of better words.
Correct.
And you want to exhale. And actually, in exhalation, are you a proponent of mild resistance, another back pressure? In other words, you know, let's face it, we could all just and let it all out at once. But sometimes if you blow out and maybe you keep your lips pursed in such a way that there's some back pressure, that ends up having a greater effect on total strength executed as well as stability, maintaining some stability.
Yes, and you're going to see this more when you get into the heavier loads. For example, doing jerks with, say, 2 70-pound kettlebells for repetition. That's when you'll see this type of this pursed lips or very, very short, quick exhale. Versus if you're doing a really light, you know, like 16 kilo, then you can almost take regular breaths because it's very, very much of a submaximal effort. So we are going to use this short pressurized type of breathing, but that will be at the end of the range of motion, or at the beginning and the end of the range of motion.
Right.
When the effort is greatest, and then while it's moving, we want to get a full breath. It's very important to get a full breath with kettlebell lifting because we're working for sustained effort for extended period of times. And you'll hyperventilate. You won't be able to sustain the set if you don't accomplish this steady pattern of breathing.
Now, these kettlebells are getting heavier and heavier. And with the advancement of kettlebell trainers like yourself and others, there seems to be this upward trend of using you know, like you said, you know, 240 kilogram kettlebells doing, you know, a certain movement or whatever. Are kettlebells starting to cross the threshold of what has been traditionally relegated for dumbbells and barbells now? I mean, we're getting in some. I mean, I've seen some kettlebells that weigh 130 pounds now. I mean, you take two of those,
yeah,
you have 260. Yeah, so you got two of those. That's 260. That now we're not talking about kettlebell stuff anymore. We're talking about really serious weight now.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the problem isn't with kettlebells. The problem is with information or lack of information. There's a glut of information. A lot of it is not good, and there's not enough teachers to keep up with the interest of kettlebell lifting. So in a training context, really for the average consumer, the person that's just trying to get in shape, that may not be an athlete per se, but is you know, just a busy professional, just wants to get lean, wants to have good mobility, the majority of people, it's a general fitness consumer. For those people, the heavy kettlebells really are not needed. And, you know, so for a man, maybe a 24 kilo, it's about 53 pounds. That's going to be enough kind of on the upper limit for most men. And for most women, probably a 12 kilo, which is about 26 pounds, is going to be enough for kettlebell lifting. When you get into the really heavy kettlebells, that's going to be really for kettlebell athletes. Because, of course, to progress, you do need to get stronger. Strength is one component. Cardiorespiratory conditioning is another component. Flexibility is another component. So like any well-rounded athlete, as you're progressing, particularly in the kettlebell sport, you have to periodize the training. And you have to, at certain phases, address weaknesses. And, you know, strength, limit strength may be a limitation for some people. Maybe you can do very well with the 20-kilo kettlebells, but with the 28-kilo, it's too heavy to be effective, so you might need [S2] Right. [S1] To get a little bit stronger. So, you know, professional lifters will use very heavy kettlebells to strengthen their lockout, to strengthen their lower back, to strengthen their shoulders. But also barbells have a use with a kettlebell lifting.
Well, I don't want to go there yet because one of my questions I was going to ask you was is all you do kettlebell? Do you ever touch the barbells, the dumbbells? But let's answer that when we come out of the break. How's that sound?
Okay, that's perfect.
All right, we're talking with Steve Cotter. We're talking about where discipline meets kettlebell training, kettlebell arts. You can learn more about Steve by going to fullcontact.com, and it's spelled FULLKONTACT.com. He's got some great, I mean, super DVDs. I'm looking at my order right now. You should too. We'll be right back.
Bin ich ziemlich gut drauf, ziemlich schick ansetzen, gut auf Rolex, kriegt man, seh ich gut aus, hol mir den Kick, den ich absolut auf, hier wieder mein Solo ausfüllt, in dem Hose-Outfit, mach ich mir nett, mach ich.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at orbitnutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit orbitnutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. orbitnutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at orbitnutrition.com. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. I got to have my friend Paul Becker back on the show. I've been sleeping with my Earth Pulse magnet again. You know, it's funny how you use something for a while and it gets really good for you, and then all of a sudden you feel like you could do without it. And I had some problems sleeping the past couple months, waking up in the middle of the night, not being able to get back to sleep. And I threw the Earth Pulse magnet under my bed, my mattress, about a week ago, and just set it on the recover mode. And son of a gun, if I don't sleep all night again. I got up this morning and my bladder was so full that it was painful. And I haven't changed anything except using that Earth Pulse magnet this whole past week. I was even talking to Elisa about it. I got to get him back on the show. There's something to that magnet. I got to tell you something. I know a lot of people, when I do the shows about the Earth Pulse magnet, they're skeptical. But, man, there is definitely something to it. I have to have Professor Andro on and discuss the technology behind pulse electromagnetic fields because they work. My guest today is Steve Cotter. You can learn more about him at fullcontact.com, FullContact. Some great stuff up there. Let's talk about that. We were going into the break, and I was actually going to ask you this question. Does Steve Cotter touch barbells?
Yes, but Carl, I want to refer the listeners to my other website is ikff.com instead of the Full Contact site.
Okay, sure. No worries.
Okay, so, yeah, thank you. As far as the barbells, yes, I do. I use it in conjunction or as a assistant to the kettlebell. And not all kettlebell lifters will. Many do, however. And I use it primarily for strength endurance. So I'm not typically doing one rep max training. I'm doing, anywhere from 60 to 90% typically of the load, of maximum load, and then doing usually in maybe 6 to 12 rep range for 4 or 5 sets, and would use this after kettlebell training to, again, as assistance training to strengthen certain parts of the body. And I don't do a lot of variety with the barbells. I do deadlift, and that's to strengthen the lower back and the grip, which relates to snatch. And then I do deep squats.
What's the difference between a deep squat and a squat?
Well, a lot of people, they think of a squat as going to 90 degrees, and what I call a squat is sitting all the way down. So, you know, in training, we'd say an ass-to-calves squat, for example.
Right.
And the barbell squat is to supplement the jerks, to strengthen the legs, which are important for jerks. So that's pretty much what I do, and I do several variations of this. Sometimes I'll do very high rep partial deadlifts, just dropping below the knee. Sets of 35, sets of 40, sets of 50, and then different variations of jump squats as well to work the explosive lift of the legs as well.
Repetition is really important, isn't it? I mean, you know, when we think about resistance training in general, quite often what we're talking about is, you know, 8 reps. I mean, we're not really talking about high rep stuff in most cases. There are some high rep guys out there when they're looking to stimulate hypertrophy more so than strength.
Right.
But when we talk about kettlebell training, we really are talking about very, very high reps. The goal is to create greater density in the routine, isn't there? More work in the same amount of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're looking at rates per minute, speed per minute of the lift is very important. What we call pacing, the duration, and then of course the load. But kettlebells is really about high repetition. That's not to say that you can't do other things with the kettlebell. If you want to do sets of 5, by all means. If you want to, you know, press the heaviest kettlebell you have for one rep, by all means. But there's nothing unique about doing the low rep training, because you can do low rep training just as well or even better with a dumbbell for many lifts. So when you start getting into the high reps, that's a lot more unique to kettlebell, and it has some unique benefits that something like a dumbbell doesn't have due to the shape.
What role does injury play on impairing mobility? You talked about kettlebells and mobility, and it seems that everybody who talks about kettlebells talks about mobility because I have to believe it's because kettlebells lend themselves to more fluid, rhythmic motions, where mobility plays a larger role than just standing and squatting or laying and bench pressing. When you work with people, Do you watch their mobility? Do you go, I can see this person has a problem in this area, and then try to find out why?
Yes, that's crucial. And that's actually one of the first things that should be assessed. And there's not a lot of discussion about assessment, but when a fitness professional, we're not just talking about kettlebells, just in general, when someone walks into the room, you should already be observing them at that point, observing their gait. That's the first cue, or the first clue that they give us about their mobility or lack of mobility. And then we should have some type of simple battery of assessment protocols to gauge general range of motion. Can they squat? Can they have trunk flexion, trunk extension, neck rotation, shoulder circumduction, these types of basic movements? And if someone cannot do even basic ranges of motion throughout the major joints of the body, that's a warning sign, and we really want to spend time in figuring out how to improve the mobility of that person before we start getting into loading their frame. Kettlebells is one form of resistance, so we don't want to start getting people moving the bells if they have some severe restriction in their range of motion. That's going to exasperate the problem and cause injury. It's hugely important. As far as performance, there's several factors that will limit someone. Probably the main factors would be inflexibility, static strength, which is the ability to hold on to the weights in fixed positions for an extended period of time. And then, of course, their GPP, their general conditioning. Those are the three areas that are sort of the limitations for people. And of those, flexibility is definitely the primary. You can see a lot with very strong people that have an extensive background in bodybuilding or even more so powerlifting. They're obviously very strong, but you can see them actually struggle to do any amount of work with something light like 16-kilo kettlebell. And it's not because they're not strong enough. It's because they do not have the range of motion to get their body in the position where it can be efficient. So they're under this constant state of tension because they're struggling with the kettlebells. Until they learn to increase their mobility and flexibility, they're not going to be able to tap into their strength.
So, what are the most common, areas of immobility that you see in trained individuals, but they come in and they go, you know, I want to learn kettlebell, and you look at them and you go, man, your ankles suck, or what is it? What is it that you see most often in this?
Certainly, hip flexors is huge, and of course the hip flexors have to do with hip extension, and that also is going to relate to the reciprocally is going to relate to the lower back.
So the hip flexor.
Yeah, exactly. So the hip flexors is probably the one thing. If the hip flexors are shortened and they can't extend them, you're not going to be able to express your power. You're not going to be able to snatch maximally. You're not going to be able to swing maximally because you don't have that full extension, that full drive. And then the shoulder girdle is another area where the shoulders are in this constant state of tension. They can't relax the shoulder, and so they get fatigued very quickly. And related to the shoulder is going to be the upper back muscles, the scapular region, that whole shoulder girdle. Those are really the two keys for most people. And if we can mobilize those areas, unlock them, they're going to be able to really tap into their natural performance.
Are we talking about just taking these areas through the full range of motion and being very mindful, coming back to mindfulness, that we're actually executing this full range of motion, maybe pushing ourselves beyond what we're customarily comfortable with? Is that all we're talking about, or is it?
Well, there's different approaches. Certainly that's one way of looking at it, where we're doing remedial or supplementary flexibility drills that to try to facilitate this range of motion in those joints. And actually, I have quite a bit of on my YouTube channel, IKFF channel, have quite a few video tutorials that get into specific flexibility exercises. There's another school of thought as well. For example, Valery Fedorenko, who's a great and famous lifter, and he's been very influential to me in terms of my education. because he's a professional lifter and very, very high level. His approach really is that by doing the lifts, you become more flexible. So, for example, he doesn't really program a lot of supplementary flexibility exercises, but he himself is very flexible, certainly for his purposes, for lifting kettlebells. And, you know, so there is a school of thought that if you start with very light kettlebells and you do the basic movements, for example, the clean and jerk, the snatch, and you pay attention to executing very good form, which means total lockout when you have the bell overhead, so it's not shaking the arms straight.
Right, moving the weight by driving with your hips and your legs to get it moving, as opposed to what some people do, try to pull it up with their arms.
Exactly, and then at the top, the joint is stacked, so the elbows are locked, the shoulder is sitting in its socket. So if you're going slow in the beginning, you're using light weight that you can control, and you're working over time, the process of doing that is your body is going to become more flexible. It's going to learn to adapt to the load, and if it doesn't, you won't be able to sustain. So in the process of sustaining the lift, meaning in the process of maybe in your first day you can only lift for 30 seconds, after a month you can lift for 3 minutes without stopping, and after 6 months you can lift for 10 minutes without stopping, in the process of developing that specific endurance, your body will become more flexible. But my school of thought is that, of course, I understand that, and that makes a lot of sense, but I think that one issue is that there's a difference. A professional lifter is starting as a child. They're starting as usually a teenager, a young adult, so they already have perfect flexibility. They haven't unlearned it yet. They haven't developed all these bad habits that come with being alive, and so those young kids that come to kettlebell lifting, they can pretty much get right into it, and they already have the flexibility, assuming they've had an active life up to that point. But the average adult coming to kettlebell lifting, they have a lot of issues already. So just by doing the kettlebell lifting alone, it may not be enough. They need to do some supplementary drills, whether it's doing some active stretching using, say, rubber bands. That's a great supplement. Whether it's doing some type of yoga positions or modified yoga positions. All of these things are good, and there's more than one way to skin the cat, so to speak.
Okay.
But we need to put some energy, and we do need to put some time into increasing our mobility.
Okay. Let's take our last commercial break, and when we come back, we'll finish up this interview with Steve Cotter. He wants us to go to his other website, ikff.net. Check it out. I'm there right now. Great information there as well. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Later in the show, we're going to be talking with Dr. Sudhanshu Rakwar about the effectiveness of stem cell therapy on a failing pancreas for those who are now type 1 diabetic. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today.
Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer, because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at
the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com.
Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at IronMagLabs.com. Don't wait too long because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to IronMagLabs.com today. When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscle's N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour is Steve Cotter. We're talking about kettlebell training in general, mobility, and the martial arts mentality that he brings to kettlebell training. Steve, talk to me about some mobility stuff for a second. You mentioned about the thorax when we were talking about breathing. As guys like me get older, we tend to start noticing some restriction in our rib cage, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of work could I do that would increase the mobility of this? And rightfully so, because there's a lot of cartilage and soft tissue in the rib cage. I should be able to expand it, but it seems like it becomes resistant. Maybe I need some Armorall on my rib cage, maybe, or something.
WD-40.
Yeah, there you go.
I have some very specialized exercises that are martial art exercises, which I find to be one of the superior mobility exercises for this issue, for loosening up not just the shoulder girdle but the entire thorax. They're called serving T. I have some clips on the IKFF channel on YouTube where I kind of break these down and teach them. But they're basically involves keeping your palm up and rotating your hands around all different planes of motion without, as if you have a cup of tea in your hand, without spilling the tea. So your body has to sort of adapt to that position, and you're putting your body through these sort of contortions or unique angles in order to successfully rotate the hand without spilling the tea. So those are things that I do. And then, of course, there's some, on a more basic level, some really good things we can use. For someone that's stiff, you would use like a jump stretch band or a flexible band, and do a series of shoulder circumductions where you have your arms straight and a wide grip, kind of circle both arms forward and back, and then also do figure eight patterns. And really just focusing on expanding the rib cage every time it passes behind you. We just really need to work at it, and then any type of chest opening exercises. Another nice complement for general flexibility and for kettlebell lifting is called Indian club training, which you may or may not be familiar, but they're light clubs, not the same as club bells, which are weighted.
But I've been wondering when Indian clubs are going to make a comeback. They were very popular back in the 20s, 30s, and even up to the 40s. They made their appearance in gyms and also in vaudeville. Quite a bit, but I've been wondering what's going on with Indian clubs, because I saw club bells come back.
Yeah, so they're making a, you know, Indian clubs are around again. Dr. Ed Thomas is sort of the modern guy who's really promoting those, and my friend Jason Dolby in Los Angeles does a lot with the club bells, and with the Indian clubs, and he does a good job. But those are a great way to increase upper body mobility And, you know, they're very light, 1 pound, 2 pound, usually at the most. And we're circling these through all different types of planes of motion. So those are some things that I will use for myself and that I will program for students or clients, to help improve their upper body mobility. But I view flexibility and mobility training, it's sort of the corollary to weight training. We know that in weight training at some point we have to lift heavier to get stronger. And, you know, with flexibility, it's the same thing. We have to push, and it's not always comfortable. It's easy to skip over, but we have to put in some time to work on our weaknesses and to increase our range of motion, to kind of push ourselves beyond its comfort zone. Not in a vicious way, in a more gentle, but a sustained way. So, if somebody doesn't know how to stretch, it's probably useful just to sign up for a couple of yoga classes just to get some ideas. You know, it's not so much what type of stretching we do. It's really just a matter of putting our body into these extended ranges of motion and learning to breathe, learning to relax into that position and improve our mobility.
You know something funny? I was doing hot yoga classes for a while every Thursday night, and I got to tell you, man, they rock. They're so great. What's that? Uh-huh.
The Bikram, you talked
about. Yeah, right? Bikram, exactly. Yeah. And the rooms were 120 degrees. I mean, we're talking about hot, okay? First time I did the class, I had too much clothes on. I ended up stripping my shirt off. And if I could have taken my pants off, I would have. But in the future, I would start wearing shorts and stuff. But at that right. first class, it was just way too hot. But anyway, I first of all have so much respect for people who are able to, perform those yoga stances so steadily. Yoga not only is great for stretching, but it improves balance. And balance has been linked to the aging of the brain. And if you can, you know, I'm a big proponent of these things may measure, but if you can, you can also work to reverse them once you measure them. If you don't have good balance and you can increase your quality of balance, then it stands to reason that you're increasing the quality of your brain. If
Absolutely.
One is linked to the other. You know, I'm a big proponent
of muscle. You got to use it or lose it.
Bingo.
It has to be worked.
But here's what I've learned. I injured my sciatic nerve from doing something very stupid. It was a combination of seated shrugs with very, very heavy weight, followed by doing reverse hack squats on a hack squat machine that I didn't fit well into. And I must have compressed the vertebrae where the sciatic nerves come out of the back, either or at the piriformis muscle. I'm not sure where. But nonetheless, my right leg for a couple months, I mean, really, the pain was overwhelming the first night. And then after that, everything went numb, right down to the instep of my foot. And everything has come back. But I notice that I have this very, very mild, annoying to me, but not noticeable to most people, except maybe a trained eye like yours, of, excuse me, drop foot on the right side. Like when my heel hits the ground with my right leg, I have to struggle to keep my foot from just flopping down. I have to think about it. What would you do for somebody like me as far, but this is obviously a mobility issue as well, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you're restricted. You have some restriction in your mobility as a result of, could be the injury, and it could just be the psychological component of having been injured for a period of time.
Mm.
Your body has a protective mechanism. You know, I'm not going to try to diagnose you over the phone. I'm not really qualified to do it, but that would be my suspicion. What I suggest for people is what I would do for myself. We have to sort of attack it twofold. We have to, first of all, get some therapy. Dr. Peter Rouse is, you know, excellent for, you know, soft tissue and deep tissue massage, things like that. He's done some really good work helping people in that regard. So you kind of need someone that knows what they're doing to get their hands in there and maybe try to break up if there's any scar tissue, see if there's anything that can be mobilized. And then, of course, on your end, you need to attack it by increasing your mobility. I would think that, you know, getting back into that hot yoga class for 10 sessions or so, and really kind of pushing your range of motion would benefit you greatly.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I had to take off of hot yoga. Valentine's Day, I fell down a flight of stairs, and while I didn't have an external bruise of any type, and I destroyed the stairs, by the way,
Yeah. You were a true romantic.
Yes, I fell for love. But anyway, I had an internal bruise where the hamstring and the glute meet because that it got the corner of the step hit me right there on the hip, and I'm just now starting to get my range of motion back for bending over. I just started deadlifting again last time I was at the gym, and I only went up to 315 because it was very, very difficult to deadlift. And I started doing some stiff leg deadlifts as well just to get the hamstring stretched. So I'm overcoming that injury as well. Injuries really lead to, you know, we could do a whole show on how injuries lead to mobility. I've had Mike Boyle on the show talking about this as well. Mobility issues quite often are the remnants of injuries. And it's important that once you think the injury is gone, that you push that injured muscle beyond what it wants to, because every time you injure yourself, you lose a little bit of mobility. Yep. There's a little restriction. So it's really
your body holds on to it. Your muscles remember that restriction. They don't want to let go of it. So
Steve, we've come to the end of the interview. Plug the website that you want people to go to again.
That's IKFF.com or .net, either one. IKFF.
Okay, IKFF, which actually stands for?
It's International Kettlebell and Fitness Federation. That's where we run our instructor certification courses, our workshops. We have a lot of online services as well as video book store, things like that. So
I see you did a video with Mike Mahler and Nate Morrison. Is that Nate Morrison, the guy that's he's been on my show, right? The military.
Yeah, he's in Iraq right now. Yeah, that's him. The boys are back in town, and I've done a couple of collaborations with Mike, and you know, Mike does a great job. I know he's on your show frequently.
Yeah.
So we've had people request the boys are back in town too. I don't know if we'll ever do that or not, but there's definitely some interest in that. And yeah, so we were together for a long time as colleagues, and I think that we did that back, I guess it was 2006, I think. So it's probably about 5 years ago.
Very cool. Listen, Steve, thanks for making time to come on the show today.
Thank you so much, Carl. It's really my pleasure.
All right, have a great day. And we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to have Dr. Sudhanshu Rakwar on. This is really exciting stuff. If we can reverse the failure of the pancreas with stem cell therapy, there's a lot of people in this country who would, their lives would change overnight. And Dr. Rakwar is someone who has been studying this, so we'll talk more about it when we come back. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We shall return. Want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at PrimordialPerformance.com.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the
secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today. CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio. Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer, because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You know, quite often I am not in synchronization with the medical orthodoxy, because the pharmaceutical agenda is really something that permeates it. But there is a lot of good research being done out there by good scientists, especially in the area of stem cell therapy, because these are therapies that can actually cure diseases, not make people dependent on pharmaceutical drugs for the rest of their lives. And let's face it, the country is in dire needs for some solutions for insulin resistance. Even those who develop type 2 diabetes because of their poor choices in food and lack of exercise and poor lifestyles run the risk of becoming type 1 diabetic at some point in time, when the pancreas just says, I'm done, can't keep up with this, I'm going on vacation. So type 1 diabetes is a big problem. Can stem cell therapy be the solution? Can it be? We're going to explore some of these concepts with my guest today, Dr. Sudhanshu Rakhwar. Welcome to the show, Dr. Rakhwar.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Obviously, many people have held out hopes in that stem cell therapy could be the answer to many of the debilitating, chronic, irreversible diseases that many people face today. And your group has been doing some research in this area as it relates to the pancreas. Your most recent study, Spontaneous In Vivo Differentiation of Embryonic Stem Cell-Derived Pancreatic Endotherm-like Cells, Corrects Hyperglycemia in Diabetic Mice. Talk about the study. How was the study designed?
So, as you are very well aware, that embryonic stem cells, these are the cells that can be reprogrammed into any lineage to generate therapeutic cell types. Right. And when I joined the University of Iowa in 2005, I was given a choice to choose a project, and I decided to work on this project, which is really very challenging and also very exciting, because it offers the opportunity to be able to take the research to the next level, where it can be applied to human patients. When we started this work, very little was known about differentiation of embryonic stem cells into insulin-producing cells.
And in fact, part of the negative propaganda that's spread about stem cells in general is that differentiation is not guaranteed, and sometimes they could become rogue cells. They could become anything they want, even cancerous cells. Correct?
That's very true, and we are going to talk about it in just a little bit.
Okay.
So, this research work that has been done over the period of last 6 years is based on the premise that embryonic stem cells under a suitable environment can generate insulin-producing cells. And there was a landmark paper published in 2001 by Ron McKay's group in Science, and that paper had very promising data. They showed that embryonic stem cells were indeed capable of differentiating into insulin-producing cells. And that set a chain reaction. Many people, they tried to repeat those experiments, but unfortunately, the results were not very encouraging. So we decided to investigate two different approaches. One was the science paper that was already published. So when we started working on this area, we encountered a lot of problems. First of all, the embryonic stem cells, they would not differentiate into insulin-producing cells no matter how hard you tried. So we went back to the basics of pancreas development in the body, and we decided to use some of the pancreatic transcription factors that might be necessary but missing in the differentiating embryonic stem cells. So one of the major transcription factors called PDX1 is responsible for development of pancreas and giving rise to the endocrine, exocrine, and ductal cell populations. So we decided if we can engineer this pancreatic duodenal homeobox 1 or PDX1 transcription factor into our embryonic stem cells, that might automatically provide them the capability to develop into pancreatic lineage. However, when we started working on this particular transcription factor, we used a promoter called CMV promoter, and when we used that CMV promoter-driven PDX1, we saw beautiful expression of PDX1 within the first few days, and after that there was no PDX1 expression, and we tried to figure out what was going on. So indeed it turns out that the embryonic stem cells, they are very, very efficient in shutting down the exogenous viral promoters, and that was happening in our case. So we modified our engineered embryonic stem cell line, and instead of using the CMV promoter, we decided to use the EF1 alpha promoter, which is a mammalian promoter, and it does not shut down in the embryonic stem cells. So we engineered a stable embryonic stem cell line that constitutively expressed PDX1.
Wow.
And when we looked at the characters of this embryonic stem cells expressing PDX1, we still found that despite PDX1 expression, these cells were still embryonic in character, so meaning they were pluripotent, they could go into either direction. And that was a little bit of a challenge. So nevertheless, we started working on the differentiation protocols, and we tried several of them with very little success. And one of the major protocols that is very widely used is the embryoid body formation. In this particular protocol, you differentiate the embryonic stem cells into embryoid bodies, which are nothing but a hollow cluster of three-dimensional structures that can give rise to ectoderm, endoderm, and mesoderm, which are the three general layers.
Right.
They give rise to all the different cell types in the body. And pancreas happens to be an endodermal organ, so endoderm gives rise to pancreas. And we therefore investigated the approach where embryoid bodies could be differentiated into insulin-producing cells. We were able to generate insulin-producing cells at a lower fraction, maybe about 10% of the total population was expressing PDX1. And these cells were capable of differentiating into insulin-producing cells. The major difficulty that we had using this particular approach was how to get rid of these cells that are not insulin producing. That's a very challenging area currently, and there are some potential alternatives to using this particular approach, and we are still working on those.
So that a percentage of cells would not cooperate, in other words. And
That's true. Yeah. That's true. So we had insulin production. We had much better insulin production compared to the papers that had been published by several other groups.
Now, at this point, this was all still in vitro, correct?
That is very correct.
Right, okay.
This was in vitro, and we were able to check by enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay, and we were very happy with the amount of insulin that we were getting. And the next question was whether these insulin-producing cells can now reduce the hyperglycemia in diabetic mice. So these in vitro differentiated embryonic stem cells, they were differentiated further for a period of about 25 days. And then we transplanted the mixture because there was no way for selecting out the insulin-producing cells. We transplanted this mixed population into our streptozotocin-treated mice. And what we found over a period of time is these mice, which we started as hyperglycemic, they became normoglycemic after a while. And some of the mice, they eventually developed teratoma. And how we came to know about this thing was we had engineered rat insulin promoter driven luciferase, which is an excellent source of marker for studying differentiation as well as for real-time non-invasive bioluminescence imaging. So, in fact, we had a double transgenic ESL line that was expressing PDX1 and rat insulin promoter-driven luciferase. So rat insulin promoter is a tissue-specific promoter. It turns on only and only if the embryonic stem cells have indeed differentiated into insulin-producing cells. So we were able to track the differentiating cells in vitro as well as in vivo using real-time non-invasive bioluminescence imaging. And one of our mice, they showed teratoma formation, and that was not a good news. But
What kind of formation?
Teratoma formation. So one of the major issues using the embryonic stem cells is teratoma formation.
Okay.
If you inject the cells that are not completely differentiated, no matter what lineage they belong to, they will always form a teratoma.
What exactly is a teratoma?
Teratoma is a form of a tumor that represents different lineages. Like you get skin cells, you get teeth cells, you get bone, you get hair.
Like a keratoma.
You get epidermis. You get all kinds of different cells. It's a poorly differentiated tissue. But if your starting population of differentiated cells is not pure enough, this is the major, major risk. And all the scientists who are working in this field, they acknowledge this particular limitation. So since this was an issue with our in vitro differentiated cells, we modified our strategy to use a slightly different approach. And in this particular approach, what we did is we partially differentiated the undifferentiated embryonic stem cells into an endodermal lineage. So this was achieved by...
So they may not produce insulin, but they wouldn't be sort of rogue cells,
yes,
if you will.
Absolutely.
Right.
So for doing this, we made use of a chemical called activin A, which is a TGF-beta signaling molecule.
Mm-hmm.
And when we treated our embryonic stem cells, they would form definitive endodermal cells. Now, definitive endodermal cells are the cells that can give rise to pancreas, they can give rise to liver, they can give rise to lungs, because all these organs,
uh-huh,
they are derived from the endoderm.
Right.
So in order to reprogram them or to enforce a lineage commitment pathway, we use the PDX1 transduced cells so that they can go in a unidirectional fashion and they could somehow generate the endocrine population of the pancreas. So, but this turned out to be more than difficult because you do not know what kind of growth factors are necessary for developing the insulin-producing cells.
Right.
In fact, there is a cascade of more than 20, 30 different transcription factors. They act in a sequential fashion, and unless you have all of the transcription factors,
in their proper sequence on top,
yes,
of it, yeah, you just can't pour it on.
That's absolutely correct.
Right.
Yes.
Let's do this, Dr. Rockwart. Let's take a quick commercial break. Can you hold right,
yes,
there with your thoughts? Okay. I don't want to derail you because I want to go through this process with,
yes,
you, and then I want to explain the ramifications of your research. We're talking this hour with Dr. Sudhanshu Rockwart about the possibility of stem cell therapy being the answer to the pancreas's failure under insulin resistance, and even for those people who were born perhaps type 1 diabetics. You're listening to Super Human Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it and you'll be a believer too.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro Series. AndroLean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. AndroMass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. AndroHard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro Series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro Series products today at Primordial Performance. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The Triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the Triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of Triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power block, the world's best dumbbell.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour, Dr. Sudhanshu Rakwar. We're talking about his research into reversing failure of the pancreas by using stem cell therapy. And we were talking a little bit earlier, and we're still talking about his group's approach to developing the cell lines. And obviously, it took a lot of work. A lot of genius has gone behind this. Okay, so Dr. Rakwar, let's pick it up where you left off. I apologize for having to take that commercial break.
Yes.
We were talking about magnitude of growth factors that would be required in order to have these cells differentiate obviously properly, and you're trying to find ways to get this same thing achieved with what you have to work with. So go ahead.
So I'm going to talk about the second approach, which we are currently very successful with. This approach relies on differentiating the embryonic stem cells into definitive endodermal lineage. This particular lineage gives rise to pancreas, lungs, as well as the liver. So in order to differentiate them into pancreatic lineage, we obviously started with an embryonic stem cell line that was engineered to express PDX1, which is the master transcriptional regulator for generating the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas.
Okay.
So to do this, we start with embryonic stem cells. We treat them with activin A, which is a signaling molecule belonging to the TGF-beta family. And what this does over a period of 9 days is it tries to reprogram the embryonic stem cells into definitive endodermal pathway. Once the cells, they are into definitive endodermal pathway, they express a molecule called CXCR4. It's a cell surface molecule, and we capitalized on the purification of the cells that express CXCR4 using a CXCR4 antibody. So we purified the cells, and we tried to differentiate them in vitro to convert them into insulin-producing cells. But one of the major difficulties was these cells, after purifying them using CXCR4 antibody, they did not survive in vitro culture conditions. That was a major hurdle. We took several months and years to perfect our technique. And finally, we decided, okay, we will culture partial differentiation, and then we'll differentiate these cells in vivo. We'll see whether that's a possibility. So we purified the PDX1 positive, CXCR4 positive cells, and then we directly injected into mice that were diabetic, and we asked the question whether these cells can now form insulin-producing cells directly in vivo. And to do this, again, we relied on our real-time non-invasive bioluminescence imaging approach. In this particular approach, we had the rat insulin promoter-driven luciferase, and we transplanted our cells by two different routes. One was the direct systemic injection. Another one was injecting the definitive endodermal cells under the kidney capsule. We chose kidney capsule because we wanted to do subsequent experiments where we wanted to prove that embryonic stem cell-derived insulin-producing cells are indeed capable of correcting hyperglycemia.
Right.
So when we injected the cells systemically,
I want to mention something here because it's critical.
Yes.
Not just that the cells produce insulin, mm-hmm. but they respond to the necessary glucose load.
That's correct.
Because it's one. Producing insulin is a miracle in and of itself, but getting the pancreas to recruit these new cells
right.
and make them part of the landscape that actually responds properly to
yes.
that's quite a challenge.
Right.
Okay.
So when we injected our definitive endodermal cells directly, we found that these cells, over a period of time, they started differentiating into insulin-producing cells, and that happened as early as day 3.
Wow, and that's fast.
Yeah, and then these cells subsequently, they were able to migrate into different organs like liver, kidneys, and most noticeably in the pancreas. So this happens because of a chemotactic response, because the damaged pancreas, it secretes a molecule called SDF1 alpha, and then this molecule triggers chemoattraction of the cells that are expressing CXCR4. So that's how these CXCR4 positive cells, they were able to specifically migrate into the pancreas, into the damaged pancreatic organ, and were able to differentiate into insulin-producing cells. And these mice, they were followed over a period of time using real-time non-invasive bioluminescence imaging to monitor the status of the cells that were transplanted. These mice were also monitored for their blood glucose levels. So when we started this experiment, the blood glucose levels were more than 350 milligrams per DL, which is considered diabetic.
Right.
And these mice, over a period of about more than 20 days, they started showing correction of hyperglycemia, because that's a time window where the cells, they are completely differentiated into insulin-producing cells.
Right.
And they are able to achieve correction of the hyperglycemia. Now, one of the problems of using the direct injection is all these injected cells, they land up not only in the pancreas, but they also go into liver, lungs, kidney,
right.
everywhere. And you do not want insulin production in all these different organs.
Interesting. Yeah. So in other words, when they end up in the liver,
yes.
they still end up in the liver
yes.
as insulin-producing cells.
That's correct.
Because you're dictating the differentiation, exactly.
Yes.
Interesting. It would be so great if the environment would dictate the
yes.
Differentiation, wouldn't it?
So that was our initial thought, that once they reach into the pancreas, the pancreatic microenvironment, that will dictate their further differentiation. But it turned out not to be the case.
Right.
Simply expressing PDX1 was necessary and sufficient enough to reprogram them in vivo into insulin-producing cells in different organs. By the way, when the islet transplants are done in type 1 diabetes patients, liver is the preferred organ of choice.
Uh-huh.
And for normal pancreatic transplantation in human patients, normally the pancreatic islets, they are derived from the human cadaveric donors.
Right.
Single transplant requires about 2 to 3 cadaveric donors, and pancreatic islets are isolated and infused into the portal vein. They subsequently settle down into pancreas and they start producing insulin. So,
is that right?
Yes.
So so even though they now, when they take them from these cadavers, are these cadavers mm-hmm. very old? I mean, have they been dead a long time?
No. This has to be done within a couple of hours. Less than 4 or 5 hours, I believe, and these cells, they are transplanted within 24 hours after isolation. And one of the major problems with this particular approach is patients, they are able to show correction of hyperglycemia over a period of time, but because these cadaveric islets, they are HLA mismatched, which means they are different from the patient that are receiving. So these patients are continuously on to immunosuppressive therapy for their lifetime.
Sure, sure.
And what happens is because of this immunosuppression, these cells, pancreatic cells, which are very, very sensitive, they, over a period of time, they do not survive very well. And it leads to complications and chronic graft failure ultimately. That's where these embryonic stem cell-derived insulin-producing cells and more recently the induced pluripotent stem cells, which can be generated using patients, they provide a novel approach and a more promising therapy for treating type 1 diabetes. So going back to our experiments, we found that these cells, they were situated into different organs, and we found that although they were producing insulin, they may not be the best sites for transplantation. So we decided to transplant our definitive endodermal cells directly under the kidney capsule of the diabetic mice, and then followed the fate of the transplanted cells using real-time non-invasive bioluminescence imaging for a long period of time. And we again found the cells that were transplanted under the kidney capsule, they were able to differentiate on their own into insulin-producing cells. And we took advantage of the fact that because the cells, they are now localized under the kidney capsule, what if we can take out the kidney that is bearing the transplanted cells,
right,
and ask the question whether by removing the kidney by nephrectomy, whether that will lead to hyperglycemia and make the mice diabetic again. To do this, we did real-time bioluminescence imaging, and then immediately after that, we harvested the kidney by microsurgery, and we left these mice to follow their blood glucose levels. And what we found was within 24 to 48 hours, these mice, they became hyperglycemic once again.
Wow. So the insulin was being produced,
yes,
and was properly responsive to the glucose load from the kidney capsule.
That's correct.
That's amazing.
That's correct.
What is the danger? And we have to take a quick commercial break, so I need,
yes,
you to answer this briefly, because then I have some good questions for you.
Yes.
What is the danger of having insulin-producing cells in the liver or in other parts of the body if the amount of insulin being produced is in direct response to the glucose load? Why does it have to be in the pancreas?
So pancreas is the natural organ where the insulin is produced. Now, if we start producing insulin in, say, liver, then it affects the functional capacity of the normal physiologic function of the liver and other organs wherever they might be located.
We're talking about the landscaping of it, the landscape of it, the liver changes.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the liver is used to seeing insulin, and
right,
it responds in a certain way. So the insulin's origin in the liver isn't the issue. It's the space that we lose with those cells taking up and doing something different than the liver is supposed to do.
That's true, and because these cells, they are very, very sensitive, they die, and because of their dying, they release a lot of toxic chemicals.
Necrosis.
That would jeopardize other cell function, you know.
Yeah.
It might affect the liver function over a period of time.
Yes.
And that's not a good news.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break, and I want to talk to you about embryonic stem cells versus some of the new stem cells that we have available to us, different cell lines that are being developed. We're talking today with Dr. Rakhwar about his work in reversing type 1 diabetes. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer, because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net. If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk.
Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today.
Pre-workout products crank you up, then leave you flat and fatigued. Except now, you're strung out from being overstimulated, hungry because it destroyed your appetite, and in a catabolic state because you can't eat for recovery and growth. That's why you need to get Lit Up from Applied Nutraceuticals. Lit Up is an original blend, not a copycat formula here. Lit Up delivers the perfect amount of energy, focus, pump, and intensity without feeling strung out or a loss of appetite for hours after your workout. Plus, Lit Up creates an anabolic environment by jacking testosterone levels through the roof. Get Lit Up today at appnut.com.
Finally, a Bovine supplement right from the source used in the original study. Phytoserms 347 is here. Bovine natalensis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Ruthless Supplements has done the impossible. Each capsule of Phytoserms 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM Bovine natalensis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Ruthless Supplements. Visit RLSSupplements.com today.
The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels. But most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, MaHLer.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
You ready?
Just want to remind everybody that OP Resource, your single source for peptides, gives Superhuman Radio listeners a discount of 25% off their already low, low prices. When you use the coupon code Superhuman25, S-U-P-E-R-H-U-M-A-N, the number 2, the number 5. Check out opresource.net. Coming back to our discussion here with Dr. Rockwar about his research into reversing insulin resistance. Actually, not insulin resistance. I shouldn't use that term. Diabetes, which is the culmination of both insulin resistance combined with a failing pancreas. The pancreas islet cells, they give out. And the body cannot produce adequate amounts of insulin to manage the blood glucose levels. And we already know the dangers of high sugar levels in the body. They lead to advanced aging and a myriad of diseases that plague this country. So this is really very significant research. Okay, Dr. Rockwar.
Yes.
The use of embryonic stem cells obviously becomes a lightning rod, because these are stem cells that are liberated from where?
These are derived from the fertilized embryo at a very, very, very early stage.
Right, exactly. And yeah. and so obviously we're looking for these cells. These are progenitor cells. They can be anything. They can be differentiated. They can become anything. And so these are very important cells. Is it necessary to do this work with embryonic stem cells? I know that they're I had a doctor on my show last year whose research led to the ability to turn any cell into a progenitor cell. Can we use other cells besides embryonic stem cells?
Absolutely. Actually, the embryonic stem cells, they are currently the gold standard for doing this kind of research. But there are several other cell types, and most notably the induced pluripotent stem cells that have been developed by the Japanese researchers Shinya Yamanaka,
right,
and Rudolf Janisch and George Daly here in the U.S. They are the new cell types. So they offer a very promising approach, and in this particular approach, the patient fibroblasts, they can be reprogrammed using four different factors, OCT4, SOX2, KLF, and c-MYC, into an embryonic stem cell-like cell, which can further be differentiated into any kind of cell type. However, this research is still in its infancy, and the reason I say that is because generating the iPS cells currently requires delivering these four different transcription factors that I mentioned using the viral vectors. And, of course, there is significant progress being made using small chemical molecules and also a protein form of transduction for these transcription factors. But until we have the real iPS cell type that is really homologous or really very similar to the embryonic stem cells, I believe that embryonic stem cells, they will continue to be the gold standard in the field.
Right. Okay.
Also, there are adult stem cell types like mesenchymal stromal cells. There are other different cell populations that can be reprogrammed into insulin-producing cells, but the efforts so far have not produced the desired results.
Now, and obviously there's a lot of research being done into not embryonic stem cells, but umbilical cord blood stem cells, which obviously there's actually a whole cottage industry popping up right now. Where they will store the umbilical cord blood for your child until and now they're looking at deciduous teeth, baby's teeth, and storing baby's teeth to harvest stem cells. I've communicated with a physician out on the West Coast who is doing some groundbreaking work in the Parkinson's disease area.
Yes.
And what he does, and I'm going to pose this to you. This is why I'm asking this. What he does is he actually goes in and harvests stem cells in the substantia nigra of the brain, brings them out of the patient, and then over the course of 6 months, he they incubate them, and they grow them, and they populate them, and then over that 6 month period, they use them by implanting them in mice to see if any type of cancers or so on. And to make sure that they are going to differentiate properly. And then they reimplant them into the patient's brain 6 months later. And they've had amazing, remarkable results from this so far. They've done single hemisphere transplantations. They've done, now they're doing double hemisphere transplantations. And the results are good. Now, with that being said, do you see a point in time where perhaps these stem cells could be harvested from the host patient themselves and then differentiated and reinserted or something like that?
Absolutely. That research is just getting started. As I mentioned, Shinya Yamanaka's group, they published paper in Cell, and also Dr. Rudolf Janisch and George Daly from Harvard. They have been working in this area. Not to mention about the insulin-producing cells using the iPS cells, and this work is currently done by Dr. Douglas Milton, also from Harvard. So this is a groundbreaking research that has just started, where patient-specific cells can be harvested from the patients and then reprogrammed into the defined lineage and then returned back to the patients. So one of the biggest advantage of doing this kind of research is because the cells, they are derived from the patients and they are going back to the same patients, there are no problems about the immunogenicity or rejection of the cells.
Right.
Whereas the embryonic stem cells that we are currently working on, although they express low levels of MHC class 1 and class 2 molecules, what we have found is in allogeneic setting, meaning when the cells, they are transplanted into a different strain of mice,
right,
they are rejected over a period of time. Mm. And that is because these transplanted cells, they are targeted by the natural killer cells. And that is very, very important. If you want to transplant the cells, they should not be attacked by the host immune system. Otherwise, they will lose the function very, very quickly. So it is very, very important to have different sources of stem cells, and obviously besides embryonic stem cells, induced pluripotent stem cells, they offer the greatest promise currently.
And isn't it true also that the embryonic stem cells tend to have a higher tendency to become mutated, if you will, and potentially become tumorigenic or something like that?
as with any other cell type, these embryonic stem cells, as well as the iPS cells, they have a tendency to accumulate mutations over a period of time. As the passage number increases, the number of mutations they will increase as well. So it is very important to have the earliest passage level cells and then to directly differentiate them and then test their therapeutic efficacy. So in our own group, we have generated our own induced pluripotent stem cells from the adult fibroblasts. We have checked multiple cell lines, and we found evidence of chromosome abnormalities
right
at late passages. But we now have a cell line which we are trying to differentiate into insulin-producing cells as well as into hematopoietic lineage. So our current results, they indicate that the induced pluripotent stem cells that are of human origin, they are comparatively easier to differentiate them into insulin-producing cells and without any external factors being added like PDX1. So mouse ES cells, they definitely require PDX1, but for human iPS cells, we require a cocktail of growth factors and some of the specific chemicals that can trigger down the pancreatic lineage pathway, and that is what my current research shows. And we are very excited about our current data using the human iPS cells.
You know, I did a show several months ago about the importance of vitamin A, which
yes
is a very overlooked vitamin in our diet today.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I learned from the scientists I had on the show
yes
was that vitamin A seems to help stem cells differentiate.
Absolutely.
Oh, so you're aware of this. Interesting.
Absolutely. We are using retinoic acid in our experiment, and this particular chemical is very, very efficient in generating the PDX1 population in our induced pluripotent stem cells. So, yeah, a lot of vitamins, growth factors, and small molecule, they can reprogram these cells into defined lineages,
you know,
very efficiently.
You know what I love about this? We have to take our last commercial break. What I love about this is it always comes back to nutrition.
That's true.
You know, we get so deep into science, and we look at nature and we think we're smarter than nature.
Mm-hmm.
We can work things out on our own. But when we look, I mean, we talk about the differentiation of stem cells. We have stem cells in our body right now. So, and that's actually what I want to talk to you when we come back. I want to ask you your opinion of some things that you may have a unique perspective about. My guest, Dr. Rakhwar, we're talking about his research into reversing the failure of the pancreas. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Nobody just gonna face me with something like how I have 22. CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio. From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com. Muscle building magic happens when you put the right stack together. Iron Mag Labs takes the guesswork out of stacking with Methadrol Extreme. Methadrol Extreme combines three of the most powerful legal anabolics in the world: dimethazine, superdrol, and decadrol. The combination of these three agents will ratchet up strength while packing on slabs of muscle and dissolving fat. Don't wait too long, because Methadrol Extreme will only be available for a limited time and is sure to disappear quickly. Go to ironmaglabs.com today and get your bottle of Methadrol Extreme. When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects: estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com. Muscle building magic happens when you put the right stack together. Iron Mag Labs takes the guesswork out of stacking with Methadrol Extreme. Methadrol Extreme combines three of the most powerful legal anabolics in the world: dimethazine, Superdrol, and Decadrol. The combination of these three agents will ratchet up strength while packing on slabs of muscle and dissolving fat. Don't wait too long, because Methadrol Extreme will only be available for a limited time and is sure to disappear quickly. Go to ironmaglabs.com today and get your bottle of Methadrol Extreme. Pre-workout products crank you up, then leave you flat and fatigued. Except now, you're strung out from being overstimulated, hungry because it destroyed your appetite, and in a catabolic state because you can't eat for recovery and growth. That's why you need to get Lit Up from Applied Nutraceuticals. Lit Up is an original blend, not a copycat formula here. Lit Up delivers the perfect amount of energy, focus, pump, and intensity without feeling strung out or a loss of appetite for hours after your workout. Plus, Lit Up creates an anabolic environment by jacking testosterone levels through the roof. Get Lit Up today at appnut.com.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour, Dr. Sudhanshu Rakwar. We're talking about his research into reversing failure of the pancreas. And obviously, this research, Dr. Rakwar, is just preliminary. It's just the beginning. There's a lot more research that has to be done before this could be an effective method of treating a failure of the pancreas, correct?
Absolutely. I completely agree with you.
Okay. With that being said, you may have a unique view. The body possesses these stem cells in various parts of the body, correct?
That's very true.
Okay. Why are they not differentiating in the first place? Obviously, the pancreas needs help. The pancreas is failing.
Yeah.
The body is – why isn't the body differentiating them?
So there are several different organs. For example, the liver, the hematopoietic stem cells, they are able to regenerate as and when the need arises. The insulin-producing cells, they are very, very specialized kind of cell population that are very, very sensitive. They have very small numbers initially, and over a period of lifetime, they continue to grow at a very, very slow rate. So all these regenerative processes, they are happening, but very, very slowly in case of the insulin-producing pancreatic beta cells, unlike hematopoietic stem cells, which are able to replenish very, very quickly. So also the hepatocytes. But not all organs are same. They have different mechanisms of regenerating. For example, the nervous system, it's very, very difficult to have the damaged cell, nerve cells repaired over a period of time. That's why some of these organs, they are more amenable to stem cell therapies.
Okay. All right. So with that being said, obviously we understand what's going wrong with people's pancreases who are type 2 diabetic and eventually become type 1 diabetic. And those individuals are just exhausting the pancreas's ability to respond to the sheer glucose load that they present their body day in and day out. And I Skidmore, Professor Paul Arciero from Skidmore College coined a term on my show that I love. I love this term. And he said that that some people are just carbohydrate intolerant. Their bodies are predisposed. We look at the Pima Indian. We know the Pima Indians are genetically predisposed to insulin resistance. We know that there's a lot of people in the world due to polymorphisms who are would tend to become insulin resistant if they ate a high carbohydrate centric diet.
Yes.
So when you I want you to look forward now, maybe a decade, whenever it is that this therapy becomes available for average people.
Mm-hmm.
When someone is given this stem cell therapy, shouldn't also prescription to avoid all carbohydrates for a period of time so that we don't go in and just destroy the new islet cells that we've just turned on?
Yes. So my feeling is that over a period of time, when we start using these therapies in the clinic, it will be a combination of different therapies that will be more effective using rather than using a single point therapy. And as you appreciate that in the world today, there are more than 285 billion 285 million diabetics, 24 million in the U.S., about 45 million in China, and 49 million in India. So surprisingly, India has become the diabetes capital of the world. So there is a tremendous potential for these stem cells to transform the lives of these diabetic patients. But we also need to learn how to best maximize their differentiation into the pancreatic lineage. And once they have differentiated, how well they perform their function over a lifetime of a patient. So that's right. A very difficult question. And we are trying to address some of those issues using different approaches, using genetic engineering, using bioluminescence imaging, because one of the key factors is once these cells, they are transplanted into the patients, many, many cells, they die even before they become functional. So it is very, very important that each step is very carefully monitored, and we develop strategies to address multiple issues. And as you might also appreciate the fact that diabetes patients over a period of time, they have several different kind of complications, including the cardiovascular complications, the retinopathy, the nephropathy, amputation of the leg because of the ulcers. So diabetes is such a silent killer. Over a period of time, it will cause so much of damage that many other functional organs, they become victim to this hyperglycemia.
Right.
So not only insulin-producing cells, but there is a tremendous need to look at the complications of diabetes and come up with more challenging solutions than what we have currently.
Almost like a complete body overhaul. I mean, if you have somebody who's lived with hyperglycemia for a long period of time, as you point out, the harness, the wiring harness of the body, the nervous system, usually neuropathies are presenting themselves by causing other organs to malfunction, including the heart. When you have high levels of blood sugar and insulin, you end up with problems with vascularization due to elevated ACE levels in the body. You have so many problems. The brain becomes damaged. There becomes insulin resistance of the brain. So I see your work like overhauling a car. Oh, you have this very old car. Well, sure, you can put a brand new engine in it, but will the chassis be able to handle the power? Will the brakes be able to stop when you get to the stoplight? You're going to have to look at these people and go, you've lived with diabetes for so long. We not only have to get your pancreas to function again, but now we have to fix all your organs so that once your pancreas starts functioning again, your organs will be able to keep up with you.
Absolutely.
It's really, and you know, my frustration is, you know, you're on a different side of this, you're out there trying to find solutions for these unique problems. But me, I look at the gestalt of it all. I see people making themselves diabetic by their food choices. It's very frustrating to me to see this. My question for you right now is, what about people who are genetically type 1 diabetic? They're born and the pancreas has some sort of anomaly. It doesn't function. Do you foresee this type of stem cell therapy being available to them as well? Those, I feel bad for them because they didn't make bad choices and make themselves diabetic. They were born that way.
The research that I'm doing is definitely for the type 1 diabetes patients. It is most likely to be effective in type 1 diabetes patients in which the insulin-producing cells, they are destroyed by the autoimmune cells right in their early age. So the kind of research that I'm doing currently is most likely to be beneficial for the type 1 diabetes patients. For type 2 diabetes patients, which is the acquired form of diabetes, it is highly recommended they do a lot of exercise, they make proper healthy food choices, and they keep up to date with their medical checkups every year so that they can live a better, healthy life.
Yeah, absolutely. We've come to the end of the interview. I'm assuming that you have stuff in progress, new research that you're already working on, correct?
Yes.
Can you give us even a glimpse of what the future holds in your research?
So what we are trying to do is we have shifted our focus from the mouse embryonic stem cells into human embryonic and human iPS cell types. And what we are hoping to do is to able to differentiate them into actual functional insulin-producing cells, be able to harvest 100% insulin-producing cells, and then be able to transplant them and see their functional status over a period of time, and then maybe take our research from bench to bedside so that it can directly affect the millions of diabetic patients in the world.
Very wonderful. This is great work that you're doing. And in summary, what do you want my listeners to take away from this research that you've provided today that we've been discussing?
Yeah, what I would like to mention is whatever I have accomplished so far is just a drop of water in the ocean. But nevertheless, embryonic stem cells and induced pluripotent stem cells and other stem cell types, they are a great source for generating the different cell types that are currently needed for treating the patients. And very recently, we have started or we have seen the news about human ESL-derived neuronal cells that are being used for treating the human patients. So let's all be very hopeful, and in the next 5 to 10 years, we should be able to see human type 1 diabetes patients being treated with the IPS or ESL-derived insulin-producing cells. I'm very hopeful about that.
Yes, it's wonderful. You know, I am not a big fan of the medical orthodoxy, but your area of medicine I love, because what you're working on is truly curing someone of a disease. Using science and medicine to cure someone of a disease is, in my opinion, that should be the function of medicine, not prescribing drugs. Prescribing metformin for someone and allowing them to continue to live a broken life and eat the kind of foods that made them sick in the first place, in my humble opinion, is derelict of the duties of medicine. But the type of work that you're doing, I applaud. And I wish you all the luck. I hope that you make all the breakthroughs and everything falls in place for you.
Thank you very much. And I must mention that very recently the University of Iowa has been awarded the Eagles Diabetes Research Center by a Fraternal Order of Eagles, and they have donated about $25 million over a period of 5 years. So hopefully this research will continue to flourish.
Yeah, I hope that your approach to dealing with this is successful, and we can do away with glucose managing drugs and glucometers and all that sort of stuff, and get them fixed, and then teach them how to stay fixed and not break themselves again by eating the wrong food. And you know, and then my frustration, like I said, comes down to it's avoidable. It's like watching a train wreck. You can't turn away. You're watching it, but you can see it happening, and you think, why doesn't someone hit the brake? When is the government going to come forth and say, we have to stop consuming all these starches, all these sugars, all of the corn and all the grain, and we have to change our diets. We have to avoid these foods that promote insulin resistance once and for all. But someday it'll come. Someday it'll come.
Absolutely, and your program will definitely be an eye-opener for the listeners, as well as it can be a real challenge for the people who are engaged in the scientific field to find new solutions for treating diabetes.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Dr. Rakhwar.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
Great. And I also want to thank Steve Cotter for coming on the first hour to talk about where kettlebell training and discipline meet, the kettlebell arts. We'll see everybody tomorrow with another great episode of Superhuman Radio.